After leaving uni, I applied to try and get a job, a few different jobs, and just didn't get any replies. I feel like maybe I didn't really have the patience for it. So I started my own production company. If you look after the little things, then the big things will sort themselves. You want to be able to live off little. And that means like, don't splurge out on holidays. Because you just never know when your next job might be. You know, you might have a job in January and then you might not have a job for another 2 months.
Have you ever wanted to become a producer? Have you ever wondered what producers actually do? Today's guest answers that question. Dijon Eccles has worked on music videos. He's worked on TV shows. He's worked on big Hollywood productions. And today he talks about what it takes to make it in the industry. Guys, you are not going to want to miss this one. Enjoy it. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk to guests in the hope of inspiring you to take immediate action to find the career of your dreams. Today we've got a good one, people. I'm joined by my best friend, the creative producer, Dijon. How you doing, bro?
Not too bad. How's it going, bro?
Bro, I'm doing very well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Bro, yeah. My pleasure. We like to start with a little icebreaker. Mm. What did you want to be growing up, bro?
Growing up, I wanted to be a pilot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not Denzel Washington in Flight. Not one of them, but
my uncle was like a president of Air Jamaica.
Oh.
Back in the day, yeah. So I wanted to fly planes and stuff like that. But okay.
Did you like think about going to like flight school, the this and the that?
Yeah, I did, but back because I was living in Jamaica, it was just too much.
So. Okay. So wanted to be a pilot, like you've ended up as a creative producer. Mm. My first question is like when I hear creative, mm-hmm. I think it's something like you're born with. Talk to me about like your early upbringing. Were you always creative? Where did this passion for creating and wanting to get into that realm come from?
I'd say from an early age, essentially I wanted to just kind of like, you know, I was very full of like energy, playing outside, drawing. My mum was quite strict with like letting me outside the house when we got back from Jamaica around age 9 and stuff. Mm-hmm. So pretty much I had to kind of be in the house a lot and utilize my time and stuff like that. So I'd always find myself like drawing, coming up with my own comic books, Lego, creating creations, mm-hmm. pretty much. And then I guess that kind of just developed over time into like me making music, etc., writing music, recording others, etc. So it just kind of like progressed from initial drawing, Lego basics as a child, you know what I mean?
Okay. And then like how would you define creative production? Mm. And can you take me on the journey that's led you to become a creative producer?
What would I find creative production? Well, I think general production is just standard, the idea of like being able to put loads of different elements together that work seamlessly. And I would say the difference with like being a creative producer or applying, you know, that kind of creative tag to production is you're not just putting things together, but you're also thinking about how to add value to each thing that you put together so that maybe that's a particular person. So someone that, you know, not just is a DOP, but specifically will enhance or add value to it, and then through conversation you also bring out certain value whilst you're having meetings. So I guess you're just applying yourself a little bit more and adding value to the process, other than just like
doing like tick boxes.
Yeah, tick boxes and stuff like that.
I hear that. And like talk me through your journey. So mm-hmm. Did you study at university, like in the creative field? Yeah, talk me through some of the roles you've held.
So it started off when I was younger, essentially. I used to produce, make music, etc. And from there, I started to obviously make music for myself, and we needed videos. So it was too costly to be able to afford other people to come down there charging £300. You're like 12 years old. You know what I mean? Too many car washes to be able to get up to that. So me and my best friend, Carlos at the time, just his mum had a camera laying around, a camcorder. And we just thought, let's just kind of put our minds together, get the camcorder and work it out and how to utilize it. So I started filming our own music videos, and that generated some interest from other people. And so we started filming videos for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, I guess I was the person that would produce, but I didn't really know what it was. I would just organize the shoot where we'd go locations and Carlos would edit and put them together. So yeah, kind of humble beginnings. And then after that, I went to college to study. So I went through, you know, school, wasn't really interested in like maths and, you know, certain other, I wasn't really a technical person with that stuff. But creative wise, I knew that I was interested in music and wanted to add on to that. So went to college, studied creative media at Orpington College. And then from there, decided that I wanted to go to uni.
Mm-hmm.
So spent the summer literally going and taking like a pre-summer course at Ravensbourne, which is one of the elite, like, well, was one of the elite kind of universities at the time for studying film.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2012, like all the people that were there were working at the Olympics. So, you know, it was like the go-to. So yeah, went and studied digital film production and then, yeah, kind of took it from there.
Okay. The question I always love to ask people, so you did digital film production at university.
Mm.
Was the juice worth the squeeze? Like, was like for all the money people pay for a degree, like, what did you learn and were you able to apply that to future jobs that you got?
Well, I think for me, I knew what I wanted out of it. So before going to uni, I only knew... it was only Carlos and myself, and we were the only people I knew. Like, I couldn't call a friend and ask to borrow a lens or etc. I was already working within the music video industry on the bigger budget sets,
mm-hmm.
working as a runner. So I had a network of those, you know, more senior people, but I needed people like in the same age range as me to be able to kind of come on the projects together and be interested.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was about network,
mm-hmm.
and you have to pay yourself into certain networks. The course allowed me to meet all the people I needed to meet who I'm still work with today.
Okay.
But I think I didn't pay enough attention whilst on the course. So I can't really say. I wouldn't say it was would be a fair judgment, but I would definitely say it's overpriced because I think the year prior they increased the fees and it went from like $3,000 a year to $9,000. So, you know.
And then, okay, uni fees... It's expensive.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the network though that you built out was worth it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to the listener, if you're thinking about getting into a creative field, even if you might not necessarily learn what you need from the degree,
mm-hmm.
the people you meet, you're gonna like you say, grow up with them through the industry.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had a previous guest on this podcast and he's spoken about the importance of networking sideways.
And
that's what he says, you have to network sideways. And it sounds like what you're saying is that starts at university.
Yeah.
Because those people who you meet at university and who you go on the course with, they're gonna be the people who progress at a similar rate and at a similar time as you go through your journey.
Yeah.
So you've gone to university, you've gotten your degree. Does the degree help you to land a job? You mentioned the fact that you're already working on music videos and stuff.
Yeah.
How is it you go about securing employment once your degree's completed?
I wouldn't say a degree really has to, you know, everything that they teach on the degree, you can learn on YouTube for free.
YouTube University.
you can learn it from being on set. You know, I'd say, no, the degree doesn't really have much weight in the role in the industry that we work in. However, I know obviously for certain degrees, you have to have a certain type of certificate to be able to qualify. I've never had to show my degree to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It stayed in the box since I've got it.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience. And I think that if you apply yourself, you can definitely gain a lot of information. You know, not only do you meet other, you know, people on your course, but you also meet people in fashion, sound, all the different industries across as well, which kind of come together when you're putting your project. So I wouldn't say you have to go to uni and it has that much weight when you're trying to get a job, but I would say your next employer or the next job that you do get might be from someone that has actually worked on the course. So it holds weight in that sense. Yeah.
So results days just happened.
Yeah.
For a lot of students.
Yeah.
And just asking you outright, should a person go to uni, in your opinion, to get into a creative production role?
No, I would say no, you don't have to. I think get on-set experience, get your hands on some equipment, start putting things together, take action with what you have and what's available, and look for opportunities to learn, whether that's an internship, apprenticeship, etc. Message people that you want to work with and say, hey, listen, I'm interested and I don't mind doing that and add value. I'd say uni now, I don't think is worth the money.
You heard it here first. No, kill me. No, Dijon, I love that. But yeah, like going back to what you just said there, like in terms of getting that initial experience, getting your foot in the door and in the industry, what strategies and advice could you give to somebody who's listening to this and going, okay, all right, that's going to be my next step. What is it that they need to do to secure that internship or get on that set so they can start to build up that experience?
I would say start with the basics. Just, you know, like do your research. Look at who's doing the jobs. Look at what work is coming out. Understand like how, you know, what storytelling is, how stories are put together. Do your research on what departments come together to make it happen, and find out, you know, just figure out a general interest of which one you want to apply yourself to. And then once you've done that, you have websites like Promo News, which is showcases all the latest music videos that come out and tells you all the different credits. So producers or production companies will put everyone that's worked on the job there. So that's a great place for you to go in there, find the name, and then just, you know, use your initiative, take that to Google, go on Instagram, search the person up, hit them up for their email, just let them know that you're interested in working with them and want to get experience, and explain your what you've been doing in the meantime. But keep it very short and snazzy, like you don't want it to be long, because people don't have that much time. But there are some great people out here that will take you on, you know, they will give you an opportunity. And for me, that's kind of how I did it, or how I've done it across UK, America, wherever I go. I always kind of just use my initiative, like, okay, I know I'm going here for a family holiday. Let me think on my head, you know, use my head to message this person and say, hey, I'm coming, or this is what's happening. I would love to just even just meet, have a coffee, etc. And even if nothing comes from it, it's like they know who you are now. So when an opportunity does come that works, they'll be able to say, are you free? Are you available? Something's last minute's come. But you just have to use your initiative.
And, I like that.
Yeah.
And okay, when you use your initiative, when I'm hearing you talk there, it sounds like there's a lot of free labor in order to get your foot in the door. So once again, you know, we're in a cost of living crisis. You know, people need, like, some people might not be able to afford to, you know, take bus, take train to reach a set. If you're at least reaching out to these people and they're inviting you to help out, is there at least, you know, some coverage of expenses, or do they just, okay, you reached out to me, so we're expecting you to come do free labor, get yourself there, and then like, it is what it is?
I think nowadays people have it a lot easier, because when I first started, like, sometimes it was that, listen, we don't have any budget, you know, we'd love for you to come down, please come, and, you know, we need you to be first thing in the morning, and you're going to be the last thing person at night. But because I was hungry for it, I did it. So I'd cover my own train ticket, and then they would reimburse me if they were able to, or etc. But obviously shifted now. Now you've got like London Living Wage, you got a lot more guidelines in place for people to kind of to have opportunities and be supported in it. So most people are quite fair, you know, they'll cover your travel, the basics cover your travel, your food, those things. But you might have some instances where it's just dependent if you're able to flex and kind of make it work. And that might mean that you have to work a part-time job, or, you know, just maybe ask, you know, support from a friend or mum or whatever it is, and it's like, and you get back into that position, then, you know, you pay it back. But you just got to do what you got to do. You got to kind of apply the hustle nature.
I hear that. And then my other question on that, just to really give context to, you know, the listener and anybody who's aspiring, okay, you've reached out to people, they've asked you to help. In terms of like the actual work experience, how long would a project typically last, right? So we said, like, if you're getting your per diems or you're not getting it, like, how long could you expect to be working on a production, on a music video, yeah, before it comes to an end, before you have enough experience to go out and maybe secure an actual paying job?
I mean, it all depends on how much you apply yourself, to be honest, because if you are thinking ahead of, like, okay, for instance, if you're the sharpest tool in the box, people are always going to be thinking of you because you make their life easier. So they're more likely to eventually be like, listen, you've done two or three things with me now. Are you able to come on now? And I'm going to offer you this rate, etc. Maybe as opposed to just paying your expenses. Versus if you kind of come on and you're not really happy about the situation, and you're almost like projecting, like, I'm here, it's not paid, everyone's getting paid. Maybe you don't apply yourself as much. People might not be as willing, because it's like they've all been through their own journey as well. And when we speak to each other, everyone's kind of come from the same box. Yep. So it's like everyone here and is working has kind of come through the mud. Obviously, some people are more privileged than one another, etc. But I would say usually, you know, you get on as many as you can. Let's say three different shoots, maybe as a runner. Maybe your expenses just paid for the first two at least. Then it's like, hey, you know, is there any budget to be able to pay me a smaller rate, maybe, etc. I'm happy to come on for a smaller rate. And you keep providing value and value and value. And then eventually someone's going to be like, listen, we've got a project, I can pay you full rate, X, Y, Z. And for me, typically it took, when I first started, I would say probably a good year to be able to land myself properly into a position where I was able to make a day rate, like a good day rate for my age at the time. But between that, it was like, okay, favors here, little things here, and I would be working part-time, and then whenever I had the time, I would just go and do that little job. So
I love it. Yeah. And you've kind of touched upon it there, but it sounds like before you become a producer and a creative producer, there are some other jobs you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the fact that you're a runner.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what the runner does? I know some people will be familiar with that, some won't.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other roles that maybe you had to fulfill before you were able to become a producer.
I think it depends on the different sector. I guess there's films, TV, music. So conventionally, as a runner in music, you're going to be making tees. You're going to be, loading in, helping everyone to load in, just helping hands to help really anywhere possible. You know, maybe they need extra water, food, tidying up, everything. But conventionally, you'd be, you'd get in there as a runner, you'd help out. And to be honest, in commercials, people do have they earn a great living just from running professionally. So it's not like this is a role that's just the bottom and no one makes money. It's just in the early stages. So I went from a runner, then I went to a third AD, then I went to first AD, so a first assistant director. And the third assistant director, I guess that's kind of like you're looking after not the main talent, you're not looking after the main cast, you're looking after like the extras, the people that are just filling the bodies in the room. And then when you get to first AD, it's like, okay, you're now like in charge of organizing the schedule for the shoot. And then from there, I realized that I liked the idea of putting things together and etc. So I started to just produce.
What does a second AD do?
A second AD essentially just looks after the talent, in a sense. Yeah, they're the first AD's right hand person.
Okay.
So the first AD would be with the crew and people shooting on set, and the second AD would be kind of running the people back from the green room and making sure they're ready and they're changed and etc. So doing the more manpower when it comes to stay on schedule.
Yeah. I get that. So many questions I have to ask you this, but this is great. First one is, how do you decide which discipline is for you? Mm-hmm. You mentioned commercials, you mentioned music video, you mentioned TV.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a linear trajectory? Like you start in commercials and then maybe you get a music video and then maybe you get the big production film, or is it just as and where the work is available?
Some people, I guess for me, I spent a lot of my time in music videos, and I didn't really have as much I didn't really know how to access the film side of it. And even now, I'm still only just learning. It's always going to be a learning process. Mm-hmm. With commercials, it maybe in the last 5 years, I've kind of been able to crack at it. And that's like, even then, it's not like the top standard of like huge TV commercials that are like 8-10 days abroad, or it's called more of like the 1 day or 1 to 4 day shoots, mm-hmm. with a crew in the UK. So for me, I would say it's not really a linear process. It's just all dependent on who you know. Mm-hmm. It's very much about your network and who they know. So for some people, they've been in music videos for a long time because they know a lot of artists. For others, they might know the advertising agencies and have friends that work in the marketing department that then shout them to produce a commercial, or if they have any directors. And then for some, I guess in the film industry, it's they have a friend that's a gaffer, or and then he's like, do you want to come on set as a spark and do it, you know, be an electrician for me. For in production, I'd say it just depends on what department you want to focus on, because you could be in either. And I guess a lot of people, what they do is films tend to take up a lot of time, which can get quite boring. So they might throw a music video in on a weekend, mm. and then go and do a music video for 1 day, because you're going to do maybe 2 weeks of preparation, 1 day shoot, and that music video will probably be out by the end of the month. Whereas a film, that might take 2 years.
Mm.
So it's like they want to consistently have work to come out and show that, you know, I'm doing stuff whilst they're working on the bigger stuff. And it's similar to the commercials. Some people, what they do is they will work on a high paying commercial, get paid, and so they don't have to worry about the money aspect, and then apply like themselves to a music video, because they know that, okay, I'm not really doing this music video for money, but I can do it for fun, mm-hmm. and it's going to look cool, and to be honest, it will help my portfolio, but knowing that they've done a big commercial. So it kind of just, yeah, people are spinning plates, I guess.
Yeah I get that. And then you know, you've mentioned the fact that you can earn lots of money, mm-hmm. across different disciplines. I know that online there is like the standard day rates that you can typically earn for like a producer. Mm-hmm. Is there like a range that people can expect to earn as a runner, as an AD, mm-hmm. as a producer? Are you able to share like a range?
So there is a kind of like advisory board, which is the APA.
Yeah.
So that's the Advertising Producers Association. And they can't, it's not binding by law, but it's kind of an agreed rate between like what's fair, and it increases with inflation, et cetera, every year.
Oh, nice.
So people can pretty much Google them and mm-hmm. just, you know, sign up and get the resources. And each year, you as a production company, you do have to pay for them, but if you have a friend that has access to the budget sheet, they'll share it with you, etc. But essentially, yeah, you know, it's suggestive rates, and it's like it will kind of tell you whether it's a day rate or if you're going into the night, how much you're meant to earn. I think runners typically earn around like £205 a day, or it might have gone up. And then it will tell you all the different roles and how much they make per day with overtime or etc.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty useful.
And that's pretty decent.
Yeah.
But I mean, depending on the hours though, because you could be working 8 till 8.
No, it's like a 10+1. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So typically shoots are 10+1.
Oh, okay.
And are scheduled between 9 and like 8. And I think anytime it goes after a certain time, like 9 or like 10 o'clock.
Time and a half or something.
Yeah, it goes into time and a half. So okay. People start making, you know.
Some good
yeah,
bread.
Yeah. Okay. Anything after a certain time is you're doing evening shoots and stuff, then yeah.
So with everything that you said there, it sounds like if you're working in the creative industry, mm-hmm. you're a freelancer. Right.
Mm.
And you're not really working for a company. You work for yourself. You set up your own business in order to like get paid. You got to do your own taxes. To somebody who's listening to this,
mm-hmm.
what is something you wish you knew sooner about, yeah, like working mm-hmm. in the industry? And you're like, damn, it took me a while to learn that. And I learned it the hard way.
Pay your taxes. Yeah. Like, you know, you've got to be on top of it. You've got to. I've got a great accountant and he gives me loads of advice, but you just want to make sure like you get into a great routine of like saving money for tax. Because yeah, maybe when you're younger, you know, it's not that deep, you're getting paid into your personal account, you're not really thinking about it, you're making invoices and you're not really taking it as serious. But as you get older and stuff, you want to be able to have a record of tax, so that if it comes to getting a mortgage or anything like that, that you have something to show.
Mm.
Because you have to use that to be able to show, hey, listen, I'm eligible, I've been paying certain tax, etc., etc. So another thing is, you don't want to be frivolous with the money you get paid. You want to be able to live off little, and yeah, that means like, don't splurge out on holidays. Because you just never know when your next job might be. You know, you might have a job in January and then you might not have a job for another 2 months.
Wow.
Or you could have a job in, yeah, because some of these jobs in production, typically you're working, let's say 4 to 6 weeks on a project, maybe sometimes 8 weeks. And that will pay you a good lump sum of money. However, then maybe they're like, for instance, this year and last year, it's been a bit unstable, unpredictable. People don't know when their next job is, etc. And depending on what department you are, if you're a gaffer and you know you've got kit that you're providing, maybe you might be able to get booked. Like my friend, he's always getting booked. But in production, it's like there's so many production people, and it's all about the network, you know, that sometimes it's just that you might not get contacted for a bit, etc. So you just want to be able to hold on to money and invest it in the right things, assets that will be able to help you
get you yield.
Yeah, whether that's equipment that you buy and you can rent out, or you know, whatever it is, and maybe have something on the side that you can do when you're not working.
I love that. Just going back to what you said there, you said the last couple of years have been very unstable. What is it about the industry in the last couple of years that have made it this way?
I would say, I mean, it's not fact, but this is my observation. I would say since the pandemic, it's definitely been, things have changed. Mm-hmm. The world's changed. The way people consume content's changed. People were heavily at home on their phones. So, you know, they're using their phones to view everything, watch everything. And I think it's slightly shifted from maybe TV, loads of money going into TV commercials, to now content, you know, big brands paying influencers or breaking their budget up and increasing more like micro influencers to help, as opposed to the big commercial that comes out. So that's number one. Number two, I'd say AI, because so many companies are trying to like keep in the loop and move with technology that they're using AI. You know, I think there was a Toys R Us commercial that came out that was all AI.
Wow.
So if you think about, there was a production company involved, but there was probably not that many people involved. So, and that's probably just animators and stuff like that, which takes away from the camera crew, all the different crews that would be there. I know there was an Under Armour commercial that came out that was all AI with Anthony Joshua as well. So it's like, you know, slowly they're trying to implement how they can make certain results without spending as much.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like for you as somebody who's been impacted by it, what is your response to that? Like, yeah, how do you combat against that? And how do you make sure that, yeah, you're the one who is getting called up and you are getting the jobs and getting some income in?
Yeah. I would say a few different areas. I'd say number one, you have to stay at the top of people's minds, which I'm not always the best at, because I'm not always going to be doing outreach and messaging. Like, it's something that I'm improving on, etc. But I would say, yeah, reaching out and letting people know that you're available, maybe coming up with some sort of insight or just value that you can add, you know, in your emails. So contacting people, letting them know that you're around and available, or maybe your latest work that you've just produced, or you've been on set as a runner, etc. People love to just, sometimes it might not be, they might not respond to you, but they might see the email, open it, read it, and it's just like, oh, okay, cool, you know. So as you do it more, you stay on their mind, so when the opportunity comes, they can reach out. Make sure you're updating your, you know, your profile, your socials with like work. You know, you can repurpose old work and share something that you've done and maybe the value that you brought to it or how enjoyable it was. Sometimes I've reposted jobs like, oh, this was a great job, etc. And people that haven't seen it have been like, oh, you did that. And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
that's such a good hack. Yeah. I've even had it with my content.
Yeah, yeah.
I was speaking to someone recently and they were like, yeah, if it's been like 3 months, 6 months and you've had content that's done well, post it.
Yeah.
There's so many people in the world.
Yeah.
You're not going to hit the same people.
Yeah, it's you repurpose
your best content chances are you're going to reach an entirely new audience.
And I learned that from Gary V because he put out like a 64-page document about repurposing content maybe like 4 years ago. And if you type it in, you should be able to find it.
I mean, if it's free, we can put it in the show notes. if you're going to pay, you got to pay yourself.
I'll send it.
Nice.
And it just helps, like, you know, from tweets to old posts to just like, yeah, just changing the format per platform. You never know who's going to see it. Another thing I've done to support myself is just cutting back on spending, you know what I mean, like being a bit more frugal. Mm-hmm. Moving with the times. Another thing is retraining. So my partner was studying digital marketing 2 years ago, and it's part of a free course that this company called WIC give. So if you're eligible, then yeah, you contact them, you let them know you're interested, and then there's a range of different courses that you can study. So I've just been retraining and learning about digital marketing because, you know, we create the assets, we create the product, but I'd never know what happens after and how performance marketing will actually bring the return on investment for all the brands that are spending the money. So that's been useful to just kind of open my mind. And
also, it helps you to become, like, you add feathers to your bow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So 100%. Not only are you a producer, you're a producer with the digital marketing, so you understand both sides.
Yeah.
It makes you, that's your USP.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus,
yeah,
like you said, there are a dime a dozen producers.
Mm-hmm.
But are there producers that also have the digital marketing? So I suppose the takeaway there is sometimes if you're in a saturated market, you can upskill yourself 100%. In order to distinguish and stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something that Alex Hormozi talked about. Just about being able to stack an offer that's so good, it's unresistible.
So you've mentioned Hormozi, you've mentioned Gary V. Yeah, can you talk to us about, yeah, like some of your inspirations? Mm-hmm. Yeah, are there like any particular quotes that you that you live by? Or any books that you've read, should I say, quotes?
I read a lot. Yeah. Like in times when it's like quiet or even if I'm on a job, I like to have a good routine of like reading. So I just always try and like read self-help books or just people's autobiographies, etc. And my mum gave me a quote, which I would say is really good, which is, if you look after the little things, then the big things will sort themselves.
I love it.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes it's like you have a bigger picture of what you want to do and it feels overwhelming to achieve it. But if you just break it down and just do the small things, which is, to be honest, the harder thing to do because you have to keep the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you lack the motivation. But if you stay disciplined in doing it, then that thing that you're trying to work to will eventually happen.
I love it. I love it. Going back to like the role of producer.
Mm-hmm.
Or creative producer, what are the skills that set the best producers apart from the rest?
What are the skills? I think being able to listen to people and read the room. I think within, like, from some of the producers I've met and like production managers and just in general people, there's a lot of ego involved. You know, you're the person that's dealing with the budget, and I guess in a sense it feels like you're that guy that's dealing with it. And but for me, I've never really been that much, I don't really care about money as much as
people. Some people,
you know, make of it. And I guess it's just about kind of being able to be a people person and float between all the departments. And I would say that's why running was a great starter for me, because I got to speak to all the different departments when I wasn't providing any value and just soak in information and listen to them and hear them and all their qualms, what things weren't going good, what things that were going great, like what they liked about good producers and what productions weren't so great. Mm-hmm. So that when you're in that role, it's like, oh, I already know the camera crew don't like to wait around or be told, you know what I mean? Yeah. I know the client wants to feel appreciated and make sure that their green room is set out. So it's like, I'm applying all the knowledge of all those years when I didn't really have much to offer, and now I'm bringing it to the table. Whereas some people kind of skip certain roles. Yeah. And so when they get into them, they're not able to mitigate issues before they arise.
I hear that.
Yeah.
So on that, right, can you be a producer without being a runner?
I think you can be a producer without being a runner, but at the same time, I don't know.
Because it sounds like a meritocracy. It sounds like you start there,
yeah.
Maybe you do AD3, like you said, you work your way to AD1, and then you get your chance to produce.
Yeah.
And you, like you said, it's who you know, not necessarily what you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It sounds like it'd be very hard to just, I want to be a producer.
Yeah.
So here I go. It sounds like you've got to kind of put in the hard yards.
I would say you have to put in the hard yards, because it, you know, you're stacking, you know, you're stacking certain values that you're just not able to. Like, I've had people that I've given opportunities as an exec producer, I've given opportunities to people to produce, and it's like, when I get the feedback from everyone, it's just not the same. Do you know what I mean? They didn't know how to speak to someone, or something happened and they wasn't able to resolve it in a way, etc. And it's like, obviously everyone's journey is their own journey, but I think if you are just down to earth, you're able to listen to people without over speaking and read the room and problem solve and stay calm. Like, people don't want to see the person that's meant to be leading it lose control.
Yeah. And I've also heard, and you can, you know, confirm, deny, in those situations where somebody maybe hasn't been up to task,
mm-hmm.
the phone just never rings again when it comes to I've heard it's an unforgiving industry. So let's.
Nah, I would argue that. I would say based on nepotism.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because like, some people, if you're a guy that or a girl that maybe just, you're a little bit ditzy and maybe you're a little bit sloppy, but at the end of the day, the product comes out looking good. Some people kind of take a blight because they like your personality. Okay. Do you know what I mean? It's okay. Like, that's just, everyone's different, you know. Okay. I would say like, where I'm at and the people I know, they value me for my core beliefs and etc. So I stand on those things regardless. But for some people, I think it's like, they're able to be themselves however they are, and they can still do rightfully fine to me. Yeah.
That sounds like some privileged nonsense.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say it.
It's a mad privilege, but yeah. I mean, where we're coming from, yeah, it's like, yeah. You know.
You got to work twice as hard. Exactly. To get
10 times harder.
Spot. Yeah, bro. Yeah. I hear it. So to aspiring producers that are listening to this, they want to go away, land their first interview, land their first job. What's the immediate action? What's the immediate next step and piece of advice that you'd give to them?
I would say, so you want to land your first job. Do they have experience or they haven't got experience? Is that...
So let's go no experience whatsoever.
No experience. I would say get your hands on some experience. And that would be to contact people that are doing the job that you want to do and add value to them. So that might be, you have the idea of being a production assistant, and then you want to get your experience being a production assistant. Maybe you want to move to then a production coordinator doing that, or maybe you want to go to production managing. Eventually you're going to get to a place where you have the necessary skills, and it's just about getting the opportunity to produce something. Now for me, I didn't really go about it in the most linear way. After leaving uni, I applied to try to get jobs or a few different jobs and just didn't get any replies. I feel like maybe I didn't really have the patience for it. So I started my own production company, and I just went and found people that music that I liked and said, listen, I'll make work with you. Just give me a budget. And then it started off small. And it's like, over time I gained the skills as a producer. Whereas I guess conventional ways is most people would be applying for a job, go to a production company or agency or something, and then work their rankings up there. But I've never done that route. So for me, it's like, you can do it yourself, but you just have to make opportunities out of nothing. You know, your friend's got a track, you've got some ideas, you don't want to be the director, go and find the person that wants to be the director, get him to make an idea for it, you know, budget it out. If it's £20, what things do you need, go and shoot it. And then it's like, as you gain your experience, you start to understand, okay, certain thing for yourself, so that when you approach that person, it's like, listen, I'm really hungry for opportunity, I've been making things work, here's an idea of what it looks like. Might not be the most glamorous things, might just be shot on your phone, but it shows initiative and it shows hunger. And then it's like, when that person has the right opportunity, you might not get the biggest role, but I'd say they will value the fact that you're applying yourself and that you're hungry. Because if you're hungry, just you're going to be a gem on their team. So you know,
I love that. And you mentioned the fact that you started your own business after getting a few rejections. I think, like, that's so resourceful, right? It's like, if the opportunities aren't coming to you, you make your own opportunity. As a business owner and starting your own production, like, can you talk through what that was like? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't all plain sailing, right? So it's not just go start your own business.
Everything's
going to be successful. Give us like some of the reality of what it was actually like starting your own business and maybe share some stories?
I know everyone wants to look like an entrepreneur, and looks like, for me, I'm like, I always just wanted to be on a team and just play my role. But that's just the route that I found myself in. And even then, I didn't even necessarily want to be considered the leader. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, for me, I'd guess it, second year of uni. So from 12 years old, always came up with a name. Obviously, my name's Dijon. And my best friend at the time was Carlos as well. So it was just called Dijon and Carlos, DNC. And then it was DC Films. And then when we'd already been doing projects. So when I went into uni, we was doing projects and we was using the network inside of it to do the projects. But then it came to a bit where we needed equipment. And I'd say, you know, it's like, what comes first? Is it the chicken or the egg? Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, you need to get equipment out, but you need insurance, but you need trade references. So even just coming up, like, understanding how to do an incorporation was already a challenge. Like, it took ages to understand shares and all those things. And no one really has, like, I didn't really have many people around me. I did have one person, shout out to Mari as well. Tamari Johnson. He was super useful. Like, he had already created his own company. So he just kind of guided me through it and then gave me the necessary information. I went and done the rest. And then that was just a challenge. That was the first one. But then obviously it was like starting a bank account. Then it was like learning about invoices and how to do an invoice and what details to put on the invoice. And I'd say obviously over the years it's progressed, like, you're always learning. It never stops. I'd say one of the biggest things is cash flow management. Because if you're getting like money from labels or brands or agencies and you're having to manage all of that simultaneously, you've got 60 to 80% going out to the crew, but then you have to cash, bankroll another production at the same time. It's like, it can get very messy.
And with that, like you said, you got a bankroll production. Are you getting money from brands and agencies first, or are you having to foot the bill and then hope that the money is coming? Like, how does it work?
I always do 50% up front, if not 75, depending on the production and how quickly it's going to go. But there's been times when it's like, it's been a fast production, the contract's been signed, and because of the nature of the business, like a label, sometimes they're able to push a payment faster, but sometimes they don't. And let's say you're shooting on a Monday and it gets signed off on a Friday, the money might not land until Tuesday, but you have to pay for everything. Location, food, all the, so you get put in a situation where the money's coming, but you have to foot some of the bill. So like on my first label job, I think it was like $8,000 or something. I had a credit card and the limit was like $3,000, and I had to foot some of the bill with the credit card. And then the whole, you know, payment system, no one really explains it. So you have to do a quote, that quote gets approved, then you get a number, and then with that number, then you have to
input PO.
The PO. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a process. And I guess sometimes people on the other side don't understand all the logistics. They just think you're trying to be difficult.
So how to someone who's listening to this, or like there could be producers listening to this, like, I'm going through this right now.
Yeah.
Like, how is it you make sure that the cash flow is flowing?
Contracts. And just agreements, letting them know, like, you know, being realistic and being transparent. I think in the UK, there's like a... it's good to look like things are done effortlessly and not complain and just get on with it. And, you know, it's not a problem. But we're talking like 20,000, 30,000, 50,000. You know, when you start, even if you're starting small and you're starting with 20, whatever it is, you can't afford to run that production on your own. So it's like, you just got to be transparent. Like, hey, listen, it's going to cost X, Y, and Z to put these things together. You know, can we agree to give you 50% up front? You know, maybe 25% on the day of the shoot to cover all the things on the shoot. Because again, certain people are going to want to get paid vendors quite quickly. And then on completion, the rest. Or, you know, you can structure deals. And I think that's something that just naturally I had to develop over time. Like, I didn't attend any business courses that taught me about that. But you just have to get the confidence to know what you're talking about.
So do you feel like if you did go to business courses, you'd be better at negotiating?
I would say, I don't know what business school looks like, but Carlos studied business.
Okay.
And like, his tutor asked us to come into his class to teach.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so when we was in uni,
there's like, nothing.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, we're presenting to his class about our business that
the lesson the lesson is in the doing.
No
classroom can teach you about making sure you got P's to pay people.
I hear that.
Bro, like, it sounds like there's a lot that goes into production. Just to help, you know, round out the picture, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. First, like, what is the most stressful aspect of being a producer?
Most stressful aspect? I don't really get that stress on it. I think it's just... it can be sometimes dealing with difficult crew. Like, I think there's a thing, it's like, you know, producers are almost given this tag where they, you know, oh, you handle everything, you, the budget, you do this, you know, if something breaks, you're going to be responsible, it's fine. Or, you know, there's insurance or that. I think sometimes crew don't understand, like, producers are just like you, working as a position. We have a boss as well, you know, like everyone always has a boss.
Who does the producer, the exec producer you report into?
Yeah, the exec producer, the production company, or even if you're dealing with the client and their bosses. So it's like everything has to be on point. And if it doesn't go on point, we still have to be accountable for it. So sometimes it's just the approach of like, we're all working as a team. You know, you're on it for a day. I've been on it for maybe 2 weeks. And if something slips or doesn't go that great, it's just having that empathy to know, like, stay calm, it can be sorted. So it's just sometimes working with difficult crew members that can be a bit privileged and maybe want everything and et cetera now. And it's like, there's only two or three of us. We're going to sort it, but just have the empathy to know that, like, it just takes a little second.
And just on that, like, what's your approach to managing those difficult situations? And yeah, what advice could you give to people who might be dealing with difficult clients?
I find it really easy to connect to people. So sometimes I might get a little bit annoyed on the sideline, etc., but I know how to kind of like voice that and explain what I'm feeling and here to there. And it comes down to listening to people. It's like, okay, so what's going on with you? Because everyone's kind of got main character syndrome. You know, everyone just thinks about themselves in a sense. So it's like, before I say anything, do you have anything to say? What's going on? What's not going right, etc. And then they voice their thing and I'm like, I didn't know about that, or I was aware or whatever. And then it's like voicing yours. So it's just kind of being able to understand issues and problem solve. And I find that just being real with people and communicating and just letting them know, like, you know, I'm human too and I'm just trying my best, but you can let me know if this needs to be improved or whatever, and I'll put my time and attention to it and it will be resolved. You know, it's like, if you have that approach, most of the time you'll find that the issue is not really that big of a deal.
I like it. And then, so yeah, on the flip side, you know, we've spoken about, you know, some of the stresses and handling difficult situations and difficult moments. for you, what's like the most rewarding aspect of being a creative producer?
I'd say the most rewarding aspect is, for me, is actually wrapping the shoot and then seeing the edit and being in the grade. Like, I love the color grade. I like being when, you know, we've got a finished product, everyone's happy, it's been signed off, and now we get to play with the small details that bring out the joy in watching the piece. That's probably my most favorite aspect. As well as hearing the reactions from everyone when it comes out and seeing the impact it has on the cultural landscape. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a music video and it was really fun and engaging, or whether it was a piece of content that had great casting and it was just, you know, really hit home. I'd say recently, I'd say now it's a more in alignment with performance marketing and how well it does, because I like seeing how well you know, a film lands and like the script and etc., and how well it does, whether it sells out and people go to it and it's always remembered and referenced, you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's just making work that is impactful.
I love that. And just piggybacking off the back of that, what is some of the most impactful work that you've been a part of?
Interesting. That's actually a good one, to be honest. I'd say, that's actually a really good one. I've done a few pieces, but you know what? That's actually a really interesting one, because I never really, in the moment, like, it feels great, but because they're so quick, yeah, and it's like things are always moving, like it's hard to find that time that made me think, this is interesting. I'd say I'm working on something at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a script and also creating a film. And I would say there's a photo book attached to it. So this would probably be my most impactful and rewarding project. And it's basically incompetent. It focuses on like finding rarity within everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
And the special people that kind of just add joy into our lives. So obviously you've been a part of music videos, etc., and at a certain time, a certain age, I'll be like, you know, working with Stormzy, you know, that was cool. Working with Six, TED Ness, Cristiano Ronaldo, but those are cool when in the
but they're not
of,
impactful yeah for you
yeah for me because I don't that. Really care about clout and yeah, all that. So yeah, like yeah. I've done so many different jobs. I've been in the States and worked with rappers, Young Dolph, but then I've worked with Biggie Smalls, baby mother.
Faith Hill.
Faith Evans. You know, I've done an interview with Faith Evans, DJ Supreme, like a variety of people, and they're all cool people, etc. But I would say the work now that I'm finding is the most rewarding is the work that I'm going to create, because I believe that there's no clout in it.
Yeah.
And it actually is going to hit home because it looks cool, but it also has a meaning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's it. We're rounding out this section, but, mm-hmm. you know, just in terms of the industry and like producers in general,
mm-hmm.
would you say there are any misconceptions? And like, what is it that people think about producers, creative producers? And you're just like, that's gas, man. That's not real.
I would say that a big misconception would be that we are not making loads of money compared to the people that are on there for the set. Because when you average out the amount of time that you're working on one project, might be for 2 months before you actually shoot, it's pretty much like it's probably less than what someone will come on for on a certain day rate. So just know that, like, you know, when you're asking for additional things to happen, etc., we would like it to happen too, but we also have KPIs to hit and please other people as well, and that we can't just
find budget out of nowhere,
you know.
I get that.
Yeah.
So people think that producers have all this money.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, you don't.
Yeah. We have to report and, you know, make other people money. That's the whole point of it. You know, it's a business. So
I hear that.
Yeah.
This has been such an insightful conversation. I really feel like that I've had people on before in the industry, but you've just given like a new layer, and I'm like, okay, this is starting to make some sense. Okay. In terms of your future, where does Dijon see himself in the next 5 and 10 years?
I see myself show running. So yeah, I see myself show running. I see myself.
What's the difference between show running and running?
Show running is essentially you are attached to the creative from an early standpoint and you see it through all the way to delivery when it comes out on TV. Okay. So essentially you're making TV series.
Okay.
You know, I'd say that would be the first stage, and then I want to get into films as well. But yeah, essentially, yeah, just, you know, being abroad, being in the US, working across the US and UK and making opportunities happen, adding value to people's stories. But yeah, developing stories and turning that into TV series or films.
Sick, sick, sick. And then, yeah, like just to kind of round off to anybody who's in the industry, thinking about getting into the industry, if there was one insight or takeaway you wanted them to have from this conversation, what would it be, or what would you want to say to them?
I'd say never give up.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Sick, sick, sick. All right. You ready for the quick fire rounds?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Let's do this. Got a draw for the phone. Here we go. Wait, let me just make sure this is right. Yeah. Okay. Stunning visuals or brilliant dialogue?
Brilliant dialogue.
Unpredictable genius or reliable talent?
Reliable talent.
Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Big budget and a tight deadline or low budget and creative freedom?
Low budget and creative freedom.
I love it. Work from home or work from the office studio?
Work from home.
Okay. Yeah. It can be hard to direct a film from home, but I'll produce, sorry. Passion project or guaranteed profits?
Guarantee projects.
Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Past.
Who has it easier, men or women?
No comment.
So many people start doing that. Who would your dream dinner guest be?
Donald Glover.
Oh, yeah, I like him. And then something similar, like if you could work with like one person or brand on a project, who would, what would your dream person or project be?
Oh, that's a good one, you know.
Manifest it.
I'd love to work with, yeah, the team from Atlanta.
On their next paper boy, yeah. Paper boy, gotta get that paper boy. If you know, you know. Dijon, bro, this has been such a sick conversation. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast.
Yeah.
With everything that you've been through, and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
I would be doing the same thing for sure. Advice that I would give is slow and steady wins the race. Don't rush it. Have a great connection with God, and that's it.
Jeez, amen to that. Amen to that. Dijon, bro. This has been such a wonderful conversation. Where can people find you, bro?
You can find me on Instagram, Dijon Eccles, LinkedIn. Those are best places, yeah.
We're going to make sure to link that in the show notes, people. And yeah, if you've gotten to this point in the podcast, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, share, comment. Let us know how you found the episode. Let us know who you want to hear from next. Mm-hmm. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. Now get out there, take some action, find a career of your dreams. Over and out.
Peace.